Our text today is Matthew 25, as Harry read just a moment ago. This is a difficult sermon for me to preach because as I look at the substance of it, I notice how far I am from where I think I need to be. So if some of y'all think that I'm preaching at you today, remember that I'm preaching at me. And in my preaching at me, some of it might leak over to y'all too. Because my prayer always is that I don't just stand up here and talk, because almost anybody can stand up here and talk, but that God speak through me to you what He wants you to hear. Sometimes that's what I intend to say, and sometimes it's totally different. So let's see what God's going to say today. In this passage today, we see a few things right off the bat. The first thing I see here is that what we do matters to God. God is concerned about what we think. God's concerned about what we believe. God's concerned about what we feel. But we see in this text that God is also concerned about what we do. What we do toward and with the people around us. What we do matters to God. The second thing I see here is that there is a very close correlation between the first commandment and the second commandment. Elsewhere in the Gospels, we can see that once upon a time, a man came up to Jesus, and he said, "Teacher, what is the greatest commandment of them all?" Now, when you ask that kind of question, how many answers are you looking for? One. You want to know who the greatest baseball player is, you want one answer. Okay, so here's this guy, asked Jesus, what's the greatest commandment? He wants one answer. How many answers does Jesus give him? Two. The first commandment is love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. And the second greatest commandment, because they're part, they go together, is love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus' intention is that these two be closely correlated. And we see that in this story. Jesus is saying, you show your love to God by how you love the people around you. Now, Jesus is not reducing the one to the other here. He's not saying that the only way to show love to God is to love the people around you, or the only way to love the people around you is to love God. He's saying that they go together. They're very closely correlated. So far, we've seen then that what we do matters to God. And we've seen that the love for God and the love for neighbor are closely correlated. The third thing I see here is that God will at some point divide the righteous from the unrighteous. That seems fairly easy, doesn't it? We do that all the time. We have at least an idea in our mind of what righteous acts are. And we also have a list in our mind of unrighteous acts. And we find it fairly easy to match up those who do the righteous acts and put them on this side, and those who do the unrighteous acts and put them on this side. We can do that, right? We do that? Sure. But who does it say does it here? It's God. That's God's job. Can you think of any good reasons why it might be God's job and not our job? Well, who knows more? God. Who sees more clearly the thoughts and intents and motivations of our heart? Oh, God does. I mean, we can't even tell ourselves sometimes what our true motivations are, what our true feelings are, what our true desires are. But God sees all that. So God is much better at judging. God is much better at dividing the righteous from the unrighteous. A fourth thing I think of when I see this passage is the attitude that these two groups might have. The first group, the sheep, I can imagine that their attitude when they get there on Judgment Day is, whew, we did the right thing. We showed hospitality to the right people. We got in. But But I can also imagine that the attitude of the second group, the goats, might be something like, hey, it's not fair. If you would have told me, Jesus, that that was you, I would have been hospitable. If you would have told me, Jesus, that that was you in jail, I would have gone to see you. If you would have told me, Jesus, that that was you hungry, that that was you, Jesus, homeless, I would have taken you in. But you didn't tell me. So, Jesus, it's all your fault. Can you imagine the goats feeling that way? We just didn't know, Lord. If we would have known for sure that it was you, Jesus, we would have done it. It's sort of like going back to Genesis 18, one of the early chapters in the Bible that deals with hospitality. Here's Abraham. Abraham sitting at his household one day, minding his own business, and he sees three guys walk up. And being a good Middle Eastern gentleman, it tells there how he invites them to join him. And he says, Sarah, go get some fine flour and make me some bread. And servant, let's go find a good calf here and cook the calf for them. And it says that they hurried real quick, and he puts the food in front of them. And he stands there and watches them as they eat his food. The story, as it's told there, is so compressed. It sounds like he says, Sarah makes some bread, and poof, there's bread. Have any of you baked bread before? Does it happen like that? No, how about a calf? You're having beef for dinner, and you have a calf walking around outside. How long is it from walking around outside to the table? Is it like that? A few minutes? How long does it take to slaughter a calf? To prepare it and cook it? I've never done it before, but my guess is it takes a while. So here's all this time. Abraham is interacting with these guests. He doesn't know who they are. But then one of the guests says, where is your wife, Sarah? Sarah hasn't shown up on the scene yet because Middle Eastern culture, men stay with men, women stay with women. I can imagine Abraham might say, how do you know I have a wife named Sarah if I've never seen you before? And then it's finally revealed. This isn't just some guy. This is the Lord. The Lord has shown up to talk to Abraham, to tell him that come next spring he's going to return and Sarah's going to have a baby. Who has Abraham been entertaining unawares? It's the Lord. This idea of entertaining the Lord without knowing it's the Lord, this isn't something Jesus cooked up here in Matthew 25. This is Old Testament stuff. Be aware who it is you're having as your guest. Hospitality, the way we receive, the way we treat the people around us, is something very important to Jesus. In fact, it's so important he says something else about it. In Luke chapter 14, we see Jesus himself is a guest at a Pharisee's house. And he says there in verse 12, when you give a luncheon or dinner, do not invite your friends, your brothers or relatives or your rich neighbors. If you do, they may invite you back, and so you will be repaid. We know how that works, don't we? We go from house to house in our extended family. We say, okay, we'll spend Christmas at your place this year, and Thanksgiving over here, and Easter over here. And we make the rounds of the whole family, don't we? We know how that works. Or if we live in a community, we say, well, we'll go to your house tonight, and then next time we get together for dinner, we'll go to our house. We know how to trade hospitality, don't we? But who does Jesus say to invite? He says, when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed. Although they cannot repay you, you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Jesus says, invite the strangers, invite the people you don't know, invite the people who are disconnected from your world. Invite the people that need it. Hospitality. It's important to God. Yet we sometimes struggle with it. I know I do. What are some barriers out there that keep us from extending the kind of hospitality that God wants of us? I see a few. The first, I think, is fear. We're scared of people, especially strangers. Strangers who we've never seen before. Strangers who aren't like us. Strangers who maybe, for all we know, are just out of jail. Or just 10 minutes ago snorted their latest round of crack cocaine. Strangers that are drunk. We're afraid. So we stay away. Just this week, we had a stranger come by the church. A fellow that was crack addict, alcoholic, homeless. One of our people here took time to talk to this fellow. Found out he didn't have a place to stay for the night. So do you know what our person did? Our person invited him home with his family that night. Totally crazy, isn't it? Totally insane. But yet I think our person had been reading Matthew 25. I think our person, a member of this church, understood hospitality. Even to overcome fear. Fear is the first barrier. What's another barrier? Oh, how about busyness? Oh, that's huge. I know how it is in my household when we think about hospitality, inviting people over for dinner, because that's when we're home, isn't it? We're all out during the day. We invite people over for dinner, but I have a meeting tonight. And I'm meeting tomorrow night, and the meeting the next night. Well, and then Christy has other meetings. And when we're not having meetings, the kids have meetings. And then when we're finished having all the meetings in the week, we finally have an evening where there's nothing, and we just go, are y'all ever like that? Busyness. It's a barrier to hospitality. And I feel it. A third barrier is ignorance. We hear this message about hospitality. We know we're supposed to do it, but we don't know how. How do we connect with people that are strangers? How do we connect with people that are outsiders, the people that really need it? We don't know, and we don't know how to cook. We don't know how to prepare our household for people. We're ignorant. Another barrier is our poverty. Maybe we barely have enough food to feed our own family. Or when it comes to putting people up, maybe we don't have enough room in our house. Maybe kids are already crammed into every corner that's available. Maybe we just lack the resources. Another barrier to hospitality is our need for control. That's why we want to know that it's Jesus coming. Because when it's Jesus coming, we know how to respond. Man, if only the strangers that came to us, the ones that were Jesus, would have a little name tag. Hi, I'm Jesus, incognito. Then we can be in control and we could respond right, correctly to this person. But the problem is, when we invite people in, we lose control. We think, what if they want to stay? What if they don't want to go home? What if they have no home? How long am I going to have to put them up? How long am I going to have to put up with them? We give up control when we practice hospitality. A final barrier that I see that prevents us from being hospitable is our parochialism. Our tendency, our habit to only associate with people that are like us. Y'all know that's a universal human phenomenon, don't you? Whatever category you're in, whatever socioeconomic group you're in, whatever race you're in, whatever language or culture you're a part of, we humans like to associate with people like us. And yet when we look in the Gospels here, we see Jesus crossing those boundaries. And we see Jesus inviting us to invite people into our lives across those boundaries. So if we hear Jesus' message, that what we do matters to God, and that how we relate to the people around us matters to God, and that our love for God is at least partially shown by our practical love for the people around us. What can we do? How can we be more hospitable? The first thing we need to do is learn to see ourselves as recipients of God's hospitality. God has invited us into His kingdom. You remember a few weeks ago, Tim talked about the great banquet? God invites us to His banquet. God invites us to share His life. And do you think it ever occurs to God to wonder what He's getting Himself into? Do you think one of the angels ever goes to God and says, God, do you know what that Richard Heiduk fellow did last week? If you invite him into your house, he might do that again this week. And it will embarrass you and it will cause you trouble. And yet God does it anyway. Why? Why does God do that? Because He loves us. If we can see ourselves as recipients of God's mercy, of God's hospitality, of God's grace, that's the first step. And the second step follows right on that. That's saying, Lord, I offer You myself to be an instrument of Your hospitality. You have shown me grace. You have shown me mercy. You have welcomed me into Your life. Now, Lord, use me to welcome other people in. Use me to draw other people in. Offer yourself to God. Put yourself at His disposal. Number three, hold things less lightly. Here, when Harry read Matthew 25, did you catch what these people were being judged on? What did it say about their possessions? What did it say about all the valuable things they had laying around their house? Did you catch what it said about them? Absolutely nothing. God's judgment is based on our response to Him, not what we have, not what we own. If we're going to invite people into our homes, there's going to be times where we're going to have to hold less lightly to the stuff that we have. Because, you know, sometimes the people we invite in, they have pockets. And sometimes the things that were in our house end up in their pockets and they leave. And we never see it again. That can be a very easy out for us. Well, Lord, I'm not going to invite this person in because he might steal my stuff. Well, what counts for more? Obeying God or keeping your stuff? Hold things less lightly. Number four, start small. You might go home today and say, what we need to do is we need to sell all of our possessions and put bunk beds in every room in our house and go find all the homeless people and we'll take them tomorrow. My guess is that's not going to be the next step for most of you. It might be a future step for some of you, but my guess is that's not most of your next step. What you do is you go home as a family. Because this is something that happens as families. You notice that. Go home as a family, and as a family say, Lord, what is our next step? What is the next step You want us to do to extend Your hospitality to people? Just ask God. See what happens. But ask Him with the willingness to do what He says. Number five, try it out with other people. If it's too scary for you to do with just your family, after all, Lord, I have little kids at home, try it as a Sunday school class. Try it as a Bible study group. Try it as together with the fellow Christians in your neighborhood. Do it as a group. Do it together. Final thing I'll give you today is real simple, yet sometimes the hardest thing. Just do it. Sometimes I know I spend so much time thinking about things. Are any of y'all thinkers? Your mind's just full of thoughts and you're not willing to do anything until you understand it 100%, until you know the way forward in every little detail. There's nothing wrong with being a thinker, but sometimes we thinkers, we get bogged down and we never do anything. Just do it. Let's pray.